I don't watch trailers for movies because I like to see them without knowing a whole bunch about them. That way I can sit there and experience the movie and everything's just going to wash over me. That's why I'm not going to watch the trailer for a new Netflix movie that's coming out early next year called The Irishman, which was directed by Martin Scorsese and will star Robert De Niro and Al Pacino. And the rest of the cast includes people like Joe Pesci and Anna Paquin and Bobby Cannavale and Jesse Plemons and Harvey Keitel and Ray Romano. That's a heck of a cast there. And Scorsese, pretty much every movie he makes is a masterpiece. But I do want to know something about the story behind this movie, which is why I've asked our next guest to join us. His name is Charlie Brandt. He wrote the book that the movie The Irishman is based on. It's called I Hear You Paint Houses, and Charlie joins me now. Hi, Charlie. How are you?
Oh, great. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on finally getting this turned into a major motion picture.
I get chills every time I think about it. When you were running down the cast like that, I'm 75 years old. I figured I had reached what I want in life when I had children and grandchildren.
Yeah.
And then this thing comes along. Oh, my God.
You wrote this book 13 years ago. Why did it take so long to become a movie?
Well, that's somebody else's department. I have no idea. Still don't know. It just kept dragging and changing and dragging and changing. And it came out in 2004, and they began filming this past September.
Yeah.
2017.
Are you involved in the movie at all?
Well, yeah, I'm very grateful. Before they started filming, they began the script meetings, and they brought me to New York, put me in a hotel, and invited me to the meetings with Martin Scorsese, Bob De Niro, and the terrific, incredible screenwriter Steve Zalian, and me. They gave me the screenplay to read, and they asked for my comments. You know, it's a history, this book, of this biography of the hitman, the Irishman, and they wanted to get it right. They wanted to get the history right.
The Irishman.
So that's what I was there for.
The Irishman was a guy by the name of Frank Sheeran, who was a hitman, who you discovered his role in the disappearance of Jimmy Hoffa, right?
Well, that's correct. I represented him as a lawyer in Delaware. The FBI had him as a top suspect in the Hoffa disappearance, and they went after him, just kept bringing him to trial. They lost a big RICO trial against him in Philly. Then they brought him to two more trials in Delaware on basically the same material, recycled. And he finally ended up with a 32-year jail sentence. He'd been in jail for about 10 years when I got a call from the Philly mob, a guy named Franny McDonald in the Philly mob. They wanted to see if I, as a medical legal lawyer, medical malpractice lawyer, could get him out on medical grounds. And he qualified, so I got him out, shaved 10 years off his jail sentence. He was then 70 years old when I got him out, and in failing health, but not in extreme. He needed neurosurgery and some other things. And I got him out, and he was very grateful, and he started to hang out with me. And I had him to myself for 5 years. And when he started to hang out with me, he knew that I had been an expert in interrogation. I'd written a book about it, and he read that book while he was in jail, called The Right to Remain Silent. And it was the first thing he mentioned to me at a lunch after I got him out of jail. He said, I read your book while I was in jail, and I'm tired of being written about in all the books on Hoffa as being involved, and there were six of them at the time. Nobody knew what he had done, but they all knew that he was involved somehow. And he wanted to write a book, and he wanted me to write it, that cleared him. And I knew immediately this guy has a leak in his boat. He wants to confess. And, you know, I've been a homicide investigator. As I said, I taught interrogation to cops, taught cross-examination to other lawyers. And I had him to myself for 5 years. It was an incredible experience. He was telling the mafia people that I was working on his book. And, you know, to clear him. But in the meantime, he knew that we'd go to his apartment and crime after crime. He confessed to me. He confessed to his role in killing Jimmy Hoffa. He confessed to killing one of the Hoffa conspirators, Sally Bugs Bergoglio. He confessed to killing Crazy Joey Gallo at Umberto's Clam House in Manhattan's Little Italy. And he confessed to a small role that he had in the Mafia's plot to kill President Kennedy. He was not even instrumental, but he did some things that he later learned were part of that plot.
Wow, that's a lot of stuff to cover, but I got to go back to one thing. You were this guy's lawyer. Don't you have that confidentiality that you're supposed to keep with him? How can you write a book about what he's telling you?
You're allowed to waive it, and you're allowed to, the client is allowed to waive it, and then you discontinue representing him. So I had gotten him out of jail. He was done.
Yep.
I no longer represented him, and now he signed off on my being a journalist interviewing him.
Okay, so let's ask the obvious question here, Charlie. Where's Jimmy Hoffa's body?
Well, he was cremated, as the book demonstrates. He was cremated within an hour of his disappearance at a nearby funeral parlor connected to the Detroit Mafia called Bagnasco's Funeral. You don't actually get cremated in Detroit, in Michigan, at the funeral parlor, but through the auspices of the funeral parlor director, you get to cremate somebody in a crematorium at a cemetery.
Gotcha. So then why was there this mystery for so long about what had happened to him? You know the rumors. He's buried here, he's buried there, he's under Giant Stadium, etc.
Well, let me take Giant Stadium. Of course, all the rumors were debunked every time someone would say, he's on a horse farm. He's buried in a horse farm. I'll show you where. They would go and dig up the horse farm, and there'd be nothing there. But the Giant Stadium one is interesting. When my book came out in paperback after the hardback, I was signing copies at a bookstore, and a gentleman walked up to me, gave me his book, and said, "Could you make it out to Bob Garrity?" And I said, "How do I know that name?" And he said, "Well, I was the FBI Hoffa case agent. I ran the investigation."
Huh.
I said, you're not going anywhere. Sit down here with me." And we became fast friends. And, my book is based on interviews of Sheeran. There's very little besides that that's in it when it first came out. And then more and more corroboration started to come forward once the book came out. So we've had three editions so far. The last one added 57 pages to the book. That was last summer. And so here was Bob Garrity providing me information. And he told me that, which I later used in a subsequent edition.
Yeah.
He told me that that Giant Stadium thing was not that far-fetched, in that they had to check it out because the Mafia boss, Russell Bufalino, who was Frank Sheeran's boss and the most powerful Mafia boss in America in his era, Russell Bufalino owned a piece of the architectural firm that built Giant Stadium. So they had to check it out.
Did they actually go dig?
They didn't dig, but they used equipment that sensors something. You know, it's CSI stuff beyond my era.
And you couldn't
my era as a homicide investigator.
And you couldn't
have anything.
You couldn't call him and say,
"Hey."
You couldn't call him, Charlie, and say, "Hey, don't bother. He's not around anymore."
Well, yeah, no, that was they did that before I got involved.
Right. Explain
pretty much they did that in the initial phase of the investigation.
Yeah, explain the title of the book. I Hear You Paint Houses.
Oh, thank you, and my wife thanks you because I always forget that. I Heard You Paint Houses. Frank Sheeran was a hitman for Russell Bufalino in Pennsylvania, and Hoffa had just taken over as president of the Teamsters and wanted to get rid of some of his enemies over the years. And so he asked Russell Bufalino if Russell could provide him a hitman. And Russell put Frank on the phone out of Philly to Detroit and said, "Here, say hello to your president," because Frank was a Teamster. He was a truck driver.
Uh-huh.
And Frank gets on the phone, and Jimmy Hoffa's first words ever uttered to Frank Sheeran were, I heard you paint houses, which means I heard you kill people. The paint is the blood that spatters when you whack a guy. And Frank answered, I do my own carpentry work, too, which means you bury the bodies. There's some tremendous phrases. He talked about when they decided to kill Sal Bergoglio, they were concerned that he might begin to cooperate. He had gone into an FBI office without telling anyone. You're allowed to go in, but you got to tell somebody ahead of time that the FBI have called me in. I'm going to go in, maybe straighten out a few issues with them. You're allowed to go in, but you got to tell someone. And he said, and Frank said to me, when in doubt, have no doubt. I said, oh, Jesus. A lot of those moments when he would use these expressions that were just, you know, you know that this is instantly going to enter our culture. When in doubt, have no doubt.
Yeah. You mentioned that you got him out because he was in ill health on a kind of a medical pass out of prison after 10 years. How much longer after that did he live, or did he die?
He died in 2003. I got him out in 91. But he went back to jail in 95 for a year. He violated parole. Because he, or probation he violated, because he was continuing to hang out with gangsters, and then they caught him going to Atlantic City on business, and as a parolee, he was only allowed to stay in the Philadelphia area.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that he was getting $10 for each large load of waste product, and $5 for each small load, and he went to Atlantic City to count for himself to make sure he was getting an honest count on what was entitled to. And they were so anxious to put pressure on him to get from him what they could never get from him. He was not a rat, but he had a strict Catholic upbringing. His father studied for the priesthood for 5 years. His mother went to Mass every morning, and Frank had that in him. And when Frank said to me that he read my book, The Right to Remain Silent, all about my exploits solving homicides through interrogation back in the old days when you had more freedom to interrogate than you have today. And, you know, as soon as he said he wanted me to write his book that would clear him, and I knew that he had something he wanted to get off his chest, and I exploited that with him. I was raised Catholic. I talked Catholic talk to him, and I became a father figure to him, even though, you know, he was older than I and a huge man.
Were
6 foot four, 220 pounds.
Were you worried, Charlie, considering all this stuff that you were writing about?
Yeah, there were times that I was worried. There was a time, for example, I was at his apartment, and there was another guy there, a lawyer friend of his named, I swear to God, Jimmy Lynch the Catholic. When we met, this is my lawyer, Charlie Brandt. This is my other lawyer, Jimmy Lynch the Catholic.
Okay.
Hey, Charlie, how you doing? Said Jimmy Lynch the Catholic to me. Anyway, we got a call that, or Frank and Jimmy got a call, that a meeting that Frank wanted to have downtown Philly to settle a dispute, they were ready to have it. And it was time for him to come down there. And Jimmy Lynch said, what are we going to do with Charlie? And I said, hey, guys, you go and do what you got to do. I'll sit here at the table and do some work I brought from the office. And Frank said, no, this is good. Bring him. So I get in the car. I have no idea where I'm going. I don't even know that I'm going to downtown Philly, which is where I ended up. And I started to think, you know, if this is a setup to kill Frank, Jimmy Lynch and I are going with him. I mean, there's no question of that.
Wow.
And so we get there, and what we get there to is a restaurant called the Mona Lisa, and it was then owned by the then Philly mob boss, John Stanfa. And I walk, and it was a trial, actually, but I didn't know that at the time. And so we walk into the Mona Lisa, and I was the last one in. Jimmy Lynch, Frank, and me, and I'm the last one in. And behind me, somebody clicks the door locked. And that sound went, I can still hear and feel that sound to this day. Mamma mia. You know?
Wow.
And it's a room full of gangsters, you know. I mean, it's a,
well,
I'm allowed to say it's a room full of gangsters because I was raised Italian, but it was a room full of Goombas, you know.
Yeah, well, you obviously lived to tell the tale and many others. You wrote the book about Donnie Brasco, which was terrific, and The Right to Remain Silent. And the book, The Irishman, is still out in paperback with the updated edition and all those extra pages. It's going to be a new Martin Scorsese movie for Netflix called The Irishman. The book is called I Hear You Paint Houses. The movie's called The Irishman. De Niro, Pacino, Pesci, and on and on and on. A great pleasure talking to you today, Charlie. Thanks for your time.
My great pleasure. Thank you.
Charlie Brand here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.